Hi there, Bloodstream listeners. Just before we dive into this month's show, I wanted to tell you about something a little unusual that's coming up on this episode and that I was particularly nervous and anxious about because, frankly, it's the most vulnerable thing that I think I've ever done on mic and camera. But I'm going to tell you more about that in a moment. That was a tease. But first, I do also want to let you know that my colleague Amy Board over at the Ask the Expert podcast has a great episode this month on gender bias. Did you know that women are twice as likely as men to be diagnosed with mental health conditions when presenting cardiovascular symptoms, and yet heart disease is the number one killer of all women, any age, race, ethnicity, age? Yeah, that's a problem. That and many other aspects of gender bias and how it plays into an unfortunate reality for women's health is the central topic with Christy Van Horn, expert from CVH Consulting, with Amy Board over on the Ask the Expert podcast, bloodstreamexpert.com, or look up the Ask the Expert podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, you know the drill. Shout out to Bayer for making that one possible. We've also got a special series, another limited series coming out soon on inhibitors. We've been working on this for a little while now and have been eager to get it out. We're putting all the finishing touches on it and it's coming out soon. I don't think I know the date, so I don't have that to bring you, but keep an eye out on Bloodstream Media across our social. Keep listening here. You know, I'll talk about it. But that's pretty cool. I'm going to leave it there for now, but I'm excited to tell you about that one. And I hope you've been enjoying the Young Adult Roundtable for the subscribers out there, which is all of you, right? You all subscribed to the Bloodstream podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you listen to it. So you've been listening to the Young Adult Roundtable for the past two Mondays. We've got the third and final episode of that series coming out next Monday for those of you listening in real time. And thank you to those of you who have sent in some feedback based on that series. I much appreciate hearing that. One other quick thing, and then we'll get to this episode. By the time you hear our August episode, Stop the Bleeding Season 9 will be out. Stop the Bleeding Season 9. When the going gets tough, go cause a ruckus somewhere else. Stop the Bleeding Season 9 heads to Villa Hermosa, Mexico. I'm actually wearing my Stop the Bleeding Villa Hermosa, Mexico camp shirt from this season. It was like a prop costume shirt that's now just a part of my wardrobe. I have a lot of wardrobe like that, as you might imagine. Yeah, it's kind of a cool blue shirt that's similar to the Camp I Don't Want to Bleed shirts. For the watchers of Stop the Bleeding out there, you can see the picture I just posted on my Instagram account or on Facebook in my blue Villa Hermosa, Mexico Stop the Bleeding shirt. But I'm really excited about what we're doing this season, having worked with advocates on the ground in Mexico on what issues they are specifically facing and how Stop the Bleeding, our videos, and the communication tool that it is could help their efforts. It informed our scripts. It informed our production. It will continue to inform our distribution. And I'm really excited to hear what everybody thinks. So August 13th, stbhemo.com, or you can look at and subscribe to the Blood Feed, F-E-E-D, Blood Feed YouTube channel. That's where you'll find videos of not just Stop the Bleeding, but everything that Believe Limited, the parent company here, does, including the work for Bloodstream Media. So Blood Feed on YouTube is going to be a good resource for you. We got an ISTH update coming up. A lot of news and headlines coming up out of that. I've got some of those covered in a little while. Want to also recognize we've got a powerful community share segment coming to you this month. You're going to hear about that shortly. And a shout out to Sanofi for making that happen. Yeah, we didn't do an interview segment this month. And the reason we didn't is we decided, and by we, I mean I, and then eventually I let everyone into it because I knew I shouldn't say it until I was ready. But I finally agreed to let my wife and Bloodstream Podcast co-host, Natalie Lynch, infuse me for the first time. For the non-hemo audience out there, you might not understand the significance of that. For the hemo audience out there, it is a big deal, and it's only her second infusion ever, having infused our friend Chris 2 years ago. And Chris and his wife Jess were actually with us for this, and were able to play coach. So what you're going to hear in place of the interview segment is the audio experience, the before, during, and after debrief of Natalie's first infusion of me. And the reason I say it's the most vulnerable is I don't really talk about it. I guess I don't really use the word. And I've been staring at my friend Chris in the documentary for a few years, talking about his needle phobia. And while mine is different, you'll see it. Because we have video as well. If it's going to be out on the Bloodstream Media Facebook page. And I just mentioned Blood Feed, the YouTube channel. The video will be coming out there as well. Josh Bragg, our head of production, put together an entertaining and amusing 6-minute video version of what you're about to hear. So you'll see. I'm anxious. I'm uncomfortable. It gets a bit emotional, and that's okay. And we, you know, I asked both our editor, Mike at Iceman, who's had quite a feat putting this episode together. Big shout out to Mike, that I wanted to keep the emotion and the rawness in there because this is what this experience is like for individuals and families when they are embarking on these treatment firsts. First infusions are a really big deal. And especially if one of the parties has a resistance, either the infuser or the infusee. And in my case, I was the resistance, but well, you'll see how it goes. And you'll hear how it goes first, and then go check out the video on Bloodstream Media's Facebook page or on YouTube. I think that's about all. I feel like there's one other thing I wanted to make sure to get in here before we wrapped it up, but I guess I better get you to the episode or this preamble is just going to be too long. So I hope that's enough for you. Enjoy the episode. As always, feel free to send us feedback through the social channels or reach out to me through social channels. You can also email us, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. Enjoy the show. The Bloodstream Podcast, episode 38, is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. And for that we say,
thanks Takeda.
Hello and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast, episode 38, July 15th, 2019. I'm Patrick James Lynch.
And I'm Natalie Lynch.
On this episode, Medicare is considering acupuncture coverage for chronic pain. What might this indicate for the future of chronic pain coverage? We review and discuss during today's Like segment. We'll also hear from Ivan Giron as he shares his Finding My Purpose piece during our Community Share segment. And we'll go through some of the headlines and news coming out of ISTH in Melbourne. Plus, no interview segment today. Instead, you'll be joining Natalie and I along with a couple of community friends as Natalie prepares for and administers her first infusion on me. A surprisingly emotional experience. You'll hear us as it's happening in what we're calling today's first infusion segment. All that, that's what I just decided we'd call it. I didn't even ask Natalie about that. She just learned that too. All that plus Mama Sue, parting shots, and more coming up on this episode. Welcome to Bloodstream. So yes, we have no interview segment today. Instead, we have our first infusion segment.
Can I clarify? It's not my first infusion. It's my first infusion on you.
True, because your first infusion
was last year on Chris Bombardier,
who is here along with his wife, Jess, to help this year with your first one on me, your second infusion overall. Yes, I'm sorry. I know that Chris was your first. I didn't mean to take that away from either of you. He also is recording a little bit of video during, I don't know, the infusion, I guess we can call it, which we're going to put up on the Bloodstream Media Facebook page, Instagram account, Twitter account. So if you're interested in what was going on as you listen to the segment, you can see video on our social media accounts. The latest Ask the Expert features Christy Van Horn. Some of you may remember that name as she used to be an employee of NHF. She has since moved on and came back to discuss gender bias in healthcare with host Amy Board in the latest episode, episode 28 of the Ask the Expert podcast. So make sure you're listening to the Ask the Expert podcast as well, bloodstreamexpert.com. The Teen Impact Awards have closed. Thank you to everybody who participated. We have quite an impressive group that we are going through for BDC 2019. We'll have other BDC 2019 announcements on the next two episodes. There's only two more actually before the conference, which is crazy. There's August
this year.
September.
I was like, July. Oh my gosh.
No, the months still work the same way. We still have about half the year left. Stop the Bleeding season 9 will launch Tuesday, August 13th, which means by the time the next episode comes out, it will have already launched. So, you know, set your reminders on your phones, whatever you have to do. Stop the Bleeding season 9 launches Tuesday, August 11th. Episodes available on YouTube. Subscribe to the Blood Feed YouTube channel. Episodes will also be shared on the Stop the Bleeding Facebook page, or you can visit the website, stbhemo.com. Reminder to subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, etc. Subscribe to Ask the Expert as well in all those fine places. You can connect with Bloodstream on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and if there's something that you want to hear us talk about, if you're interested in contributing to our Community Share segment, or if you just want to say hello, we're listening. Email us, mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. Now for our episode 38 Like segment. But before we start, Natalie, you and I both know that every day can feel like a challenge when you're living with hemophilia A.
Which is why we want to mention a YouTube series called Challenge Accepted that takes real members of the hemophilia A community out of their comfort zones to explore new possibilities.
Through 6 episodes, guests come face-to-face with new challenges and work to overcome them with the help of a few celebrity coaches and the host, magician, and comedian, Justin Willman.
You can watch the whole series right now by visiting YouTube and searching Challenge Accepted Show or clicking on the link in our program notes.
Challenge Accepted was produced by the sponsor of this week's Like segment, Genentech. And so thank you to Genentech. Natalie.
This month's Like segment comes from the Washington Post. Medicare explores whether or not to pay for acupuncture, a move that would thrust the government health insurance program into the longstanding controversy whether the therapy is better than a placebo. And it's an interesting article because there's no conclusion. It's just talking about the proposal that is coming up and has to be turned in today, July 15th, for a final decision by mid-October. And the article kind of goes, it talks about different groups having different feelings on the efficacy of acupuncture. And despite a 2018 review of 39 studies involving 21,000 patients that concluded acupuncture was superior to sham as well as no acupuncture control for each pain condition. And what sham is a way they found to control, to run a study on acupuncture because it's hard to have a control group who, for a procedure that is needles into the skin,
right?
It's hard to fake that. So the sham acupuncture is a procedure where the needle actually retracts like a stage dagger.
That makes sense.
So that both practitioner and patient really don't know if they are getting true acupuncture.
I'd be spending all of my time on the table trying to figure that out. I don't think I'd be able to like
relax into the
meditative experience of acupuncture therapy. I think I would be trying to figure out, are these sham needles?
So the coverage, the Medicare coverage would be for chronic lower back pain only.
Which is interesting.
It is interesting.
Medicare population specific and lower back pain specific.
Yeah, but I also think that, you know, it's a gateway to opening this modality to be covered by Medicare for other chronic pain as well. So, and chronic back pain is the third greatest cause for poor health or mortality in the United States right now, behind only heart disease and chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, according to this article. It's an interesting article that explores all the sides and also just very interesting that even with the studies that have been run, there's still medical professionals who think it's a sham.
So that's what I wanted to ask you about. So as you said, there are 39 studies, 21,000 patients that basically were like, yeah, acupuncture beats no acupuncture or fake acupuncture, placebo acupuncture. What's the argument against? Like, who are the medical professionals? Well, not who, but what are the medical professionals who are opposed to Medicare covering this? What are they saying?
Well, they're saying, some of them are saying that they think it is philosophical or that it's psychological reduction of pain and that it's not there's not a proved physiological
evidence-based
modality, which
but what's the difference between if you give somebody a Tylenol and a placebo pill and the Tylenol people are like better and the placebo people are like no, you would say, okay, well, the Tylenol pill is working, whether it's like reducing inflammation and that's causing less nerve signaling of the brain or it's in there, like, whatever, it's working. Right. If that's what the results of the placebo Tylenol said. So the results of these studies seem to suggest that those who practice find it works. So what are we trying to, what light are we trying to shine through what crack exactly?
I don't know. And I think that's what this article goes through. It just shows that there are still strong feelings against it and strong feelings for it. And that even though studies have been run, that those who are against it don't believe the studies, that there's a lot of bias in them, yeah. And that they don't believe them to, I think the article just illuminates that there's still so much, there's still a large controversy over this, healing modality.
July 2nd article by Lenny Bernstein in the Washington Post, Medicare weighs whether to pay for acupuncture. Links in the program notes.
Check it out.
Thanks, Natalie. And that's it for the like segment. We've still got a lot more Bloodstream to go, but when you're finished, remember to check out Challenge Accepted show on YouTube, brought to you by Genentech, our sponsor for today's like segment.
Welcome to A Moment for Mental Health, our monthly conversation that breaks down stigma and provides a safe space about things that matter. Our goal in this segment is to break mental, emotional, and behavioral health down into its various pieces, and in each episode, focus on just one or two of those pieces. I'm joined today, as always, by Bloodstream contributor Debbie De La Riva, who is a licensed professional counselor with Mental Health Matters 2, based out of Houston, Texas. Again, thank you for joining us, Debbie.
Thank you, Amy. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Today, we are very excited. We have talked about this for months between you and me. We're discussing something that you have been working on for quite a while. We're discussing a resource guide that you have been putting together this year, specifically for mental health resources. And so just to get us started, where did this idea come from? What prompted the need for such a guide?
Definitely. You're right. We have been talking about it for quite some time. But, you know, since I developed the company, Mental Health Matters too, I've been going around and talking to different communities, really all around the country. And it doesn't matter where I am, Amy, everybody has the same question. And that is, where do you find out what type of help you need and where to go? And so that's why I developed the guide.
So what does this guide contain? What's in it?
It really has a little bit of everything. I made sure that it included, number one, the first page, it's the hotline. You know, where are the national hotlines you can call when you're having an emotional crisis? And then what I wanted to do is help guide our community to reputable sites about how to get accurate information on mental illness. And the common ones are there, depression, anxiety, but really the guide will tell you anything about, I mean, it will tell you where to get information from anything from substance abuse to PTSD. The guide has to go with the information referral part of it because, Amy, I've found that people can actually look through the list and see therapists in their areas. And just by being able to read the description and having a picture of that person, people can begin to figure out whether they think that's going to be a good match for them.
That's incredible. So there is a website where you can go and find therapists in your area. I know that is a huge problem with some of my peers is that we just don't know where to go. We just don't know who to choose and if they're in our insurance network. And it's very tricky and can be a barrier, I think.
Definitely so. So yes, it's called Psychology Today. And you can just put your zip code in and you'll even find out their specialties and what insurance company that they accept.
Oh, that's fantastic. So who is this guide for? Is it specifically for the bleeding disorder community? Can others access and utilize it as well? Who is it for?
I made it specifically for the entire community, even the HTC staff. And I found that they welcome it because it is difficult to find this information. So it's in the patient, it's the family, and all the professionals that help us. Because it's hard to keep up with all the new things that go on in our community. And one of them is there's a new service where it's called the Wingman Foundation. And they actually offer free short-term counseling for anyone in the country through a telecommunications. So that's in the guide as well.
Really specifically for patients that have hemophilia A and B.
That's right. For hemophilia A and B, later they want to expand the services. But at this time, they have funding for A and B. Also, another thing that many people don't know about, there's an app called Not Okay. And I think it's really important for our community because basically this app is, it costs $2.99 a month. You put in some preloaded information about who you want to be contacted if you're having a physical or an emotional crisis. And it actually will notify 5 people that you're having a problem and you need to be contacted. It even tells the location that you're at. Mm-hmm. The last thing I want to talk about the guide is that there's a link to a mental health screening that you can do in your own home. It's online, it's confidential, It's just plug in your symptoms and give you an idea if you're struggling with that issue.
That is terrific. So where can folks access this? Where can they find it?
Right. As of right now, they can find it. It'll be on your podcast and where you put the information. But also, my website's finally going live on Monday at the time of this podcast. And that is mentalhealthmatters2.com. And you spell out the word two. So mentalhealthmatters2.com.
Fantastic.
You'll find this resource and all kinds of information.
And we will have that link, as Debbie said, in our program notes. So you guys can go and check it out. It is an invaluable resource. And we thank you so much for putting it together and making sure that every source that you have on that guide is credible. So thank you for your work, Debbie. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. It was really my pleasure to put this together.
Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you next month.
All right. See you then. Bye.
The presenting sponsor of the Bloodstream podcast is Takeda. You can learn more about Takeda's commitment to the bleeding disorders community and the resources that they have to offer at bleedingdisorders.com. That's easy to remember. Bleedingdisorders.com. And now for this month's Share segment, which features Ivan Giron's incredible life story. His story is a great example of how bleeding disorders are only ever part of someone's challenges in childhood and throughout life. Though I suppose you could argue they do have a way of making all those other challenges just a bit more challenging. Then again, I suppose you could also argue that bleeding disorders provide the perfect fuel to motivate someone to overcome challenges and to achieve great things. Then again, I suppose you could argue that all of these things are true. It simply depends on the person, and you'd be right. But I digress. We'll get to Ivan and his incredible life story in just a moment. But first, I need to tell you that today's Share segment is brought to you by a new initiative from Sanofi Genzyme, June for Joint Health. Hey, did you know that nearly 80% of bleeds occur in your joints, and most of those bleeds go undetected, which may play a role in joint damage? Clinical studies have shown that conditioning, stretching, exercising, and the right treatment can improve joint health, reduce joint bleeds, and help resolve target joints. Balancing activity and joint health is a common struggle among patients with bleeding disorders, so the National Hemophilia Foundation and Sanofi Genzyme have teamed up to encourage the community to develop lifelong habits that promote safe joint-building physical activities, not just in June, but all year long with June for Joint Health. This initiative is for everyone. It's all activities and age levels. The whole family can start active habits that lead to healthy joints. Are you interested in learning how to get active, healthy joints for you and your family? Follow NHF on Facebook to get moving and visit juneforjointhealth.org for joint health tips and events near you. Events near you. That sounds like an undercover way to get somebody to take a significant other to an exercise class with events near you about safe joint building activities. I feel like I have been down this road before, so just buyer beware. JuneForJointHealth.org. And now on to the Share segment.
Finding my purpose. People think it's a disadvantage to have a chronic disorder. I believe the opposite. Growing up with hemophilia made me stronger emotionally, mentally, and psychologically. It allowed me to develop mental toughness, discipline, and self-awareness. Throughout my life, I have used the physical and mental adversities I've lived through to continue to learn and grow. At the age of 1.5, I was diagnosed with moderate hemophilia A. There was no history of hemophilia in my family, so my parents were shocked and devastated when they heard the news. But after learning more about hemophilia, my mom understood there were new treatments that would allow me to live a relatively normal lifestyle. It didn't make it easy because I was a hyperactive child. I was always on the move, running, jumping, and climbing. With my mom, I wore a helmet and was never left unsupervised. My father, on the other hand, did not understand hemophilia. He wanted me to have a normal childhood. I would ride my bike, play tag. He even allowed me to play the sport I loved, soccer. I played goalkeeper for a few years. I sprained my ankle so many times that by the time I was 12, I had moderate joint damage. I would infuse before every game, but I would never let my ankle heal properly. By the time I got to high school, I had arthritis in my right ankle. I hated hemophilia during these years. My teenage years were rough. My dad was an abusive alcoholic that beat me and my mom. As a result, I looked to be away from home. Then, I got involved with gangs. I got arrested for the first time at the age of 17 and went to juvenile hall. 4 months later, my father was sentenced to 15 years in prison. A year after that, my daughter, who changed the way I perceived life, was born with mild hemophilia A. Despite all these challenges, I still managed to graduate from high school and met the love of my life. I went to school, worked, and raised a family of four, all by the age of 20. At the age of 22, I was given a great chance for me to turn my life around with an opportunity to work in a doctor's office. The doctor was an ophthalmologist by the name of Dr. Lydia Matkovich, who believed in me and gave me a chance to take a different route in life. She became my mentor and immediately made a huge impact in my life. I learned to be more reliable, responsible, to pay attention to detail, and just flat out be a more productive human being in every aspect of my life. By the age of 25, I was committed to working on myself and reaching my potential. I took a home study course and got certified as an ophthalmic technician. I joined my local church to work on my moral compass and served in the youth and couples ministry. I started exercising, eating better, and became responsible about my prophylaxis treatment. I joined Toastmasters to work on my public speaking and leadership skills. I started my own business in finance. These changes resulted in a breakthrough in my life. I couldn't have done this without the support of the four strongest, most important women in my life: Dr. Matkovich, my daughter, my mother, and my wife. They helped me understand that I had the ambition and ability to set and achieve goals in my life. Things have also changed a lot in my relationship with my bleeding disorder. Where once I hated my hemophilia, now I'm a patient advocate for my hemophilia community. My brothers with hemophilia and I started a cycling club. I've become very active by developing local community groups for people with bleeding. These community groups are focused on specific ages and genders. I was able to develop young leaders to manage and coordinate the young men's group, the teen girls group, and the fathers group. These groups allow the community to share their experiences and concerns while bonding and building relationships. I participated in the Young Adult Advocacy Summit and the Teach Immersion Program by HFA in 2018. As a result, I had the opportunity to travel to Washington, D.C. to advocate for my community on Capitol Hill, which was one of the most amazing experiences I've ever had. My passion to help my community is growing all the time. My mission now is to help my community at a national level. I got the opportunity to travel across the country for speaking engagements about my life with hemophilia. I'm looking forward to going back to school and getting my degree in business to one day have financial independence. If I am financially free, I can spend more time giving back to the community and making a difference in the world. This will bring me ultimate fulfillment in life.
Thank you again to Ivan for sharing his truly incredible life story with us. We appreciate it. And if you would like to read Ivan's story in the written form, it's available at bloodstreampod.com/blog, the blog page for the Bloodstream podcast. And thanks as well again to Sanofi Genzyme for supporting this month's share segment. Reminder, June 4, jointhealth.org, or follow NHF's Facebook page for healthy joint building tips, not just for June, but for all year long. Okay, these are my five takeaways from hashtag ISTH 2019. And I say hashtag because I wasn't there. So everything that I am about to share with you, I found out about online, which means you can too. So at the end of these five takeaways, I'll point you toward three resources you can use for more information. And these are not the best takeaways, and these are just my five takeaways, five things that struck me and I wanted to talk to you about. So the first is emicizumab and surgery. There was a highlighted presentation on the use of emicizumab during surgery, how to manage a patient with hemophilia using emicizumab while they are undergoing a surgery. So during the clinical trials, the Haven 4 studies looked at 215 minor and 18 major surgeries that were performed in 115 and 18 participants, respectively. Of the 18 major surgeries, 15 included using prophylactic factor, 3 did not. Of the 15 that did, one resulted in a post-op bleed that needed to be treated. Of the three that did not, no bleeds afterwards that needed to be treated. Overall, really encouraging statistics. No procedure resulted in death, thrombosis, factor VIII inhibitors, or any unexpected bleeds. And as part of the conclusion, emicizumab alone provides good hemostatic coverage for patients undergoing certain types of minor surgeries, such as those involving central venous access devices. So overall, very encouraging data as it pertains to emicizumab and surgery. Those numbers for major surgeries were really encouraging. And part of the conclusion was that for certain types of minor surgeries, emicizumab alone, completely sufficient. So extraordinarily encouraging numbers as it pertains to emicizumab and surgery. Takeaway number two, extended half-life versus standard half-life, and extended half-life versus extended half-life. So patients using extended half-life products, on average, they have lower annual bleed rates when compared to those who are on standard half-life products. There are studies that do support that, but now it seems as though there is more and more data to support the quality of life argument as well when looking at extended half-life products as compared to standard half-life products. In Australia, there was a study on the quality of life looking at patients, well, bleed rates, PK levels, and also quality of life in patients who had switched from a standard half-life product to an extended half-life product from last year to this year. And those studies had the conclusion patients did have an overall higher quality of life in addition to lower bleed rates. And in Ireland, the probe study there also supported that not only did patients have lower annual bleed rates, but they had a higher quality of life on the extended half-life product when patients in Ireland were switched over. It is generally accepted that the extended half-life products have many advantages to offer patients over the standard half-life products, but in a kind of unusual turn, there was a direct comparison study that was presented, an extended half-life product against another extended half-life product. So in Canada, patients aged, boys aged 12 to 18, had to switch from one product to another. And in this study, they took a look at those two different products. So it's the pegylated and the FC fusion products. So these two products, they took a look at the factor VIII levels at 3, 24, 48, and 72 hours after infusions of each. And then 1 to 3 months later, they performed the same analysis for those who switched, and the investigators found that no significant difference occurred in the two extended half-life products when it came to drug clearance, half-life, area under the curve, volume of distribution at steady state, or time taken for factor VIII levels to drop to 5%, 3%, and 1%. So a lot of commonality found between these two different products. And so overall, when it comes to factor presentations, interesting that the quality of life argument and data to support the quality of life argument being made more and more to support the use of extended half-life products over standard half-life products. And at least when it comes to two in particular extended half-life products, one study may argue that they have a lot more in common, these products, than they have that separates them. Takeaway number three, gene therapy. So a few presentations of data as it relates to gene therapy. One from BioMarin, who has a gene therapy, investigational therapy for hemophilia A, that currently has 3 years of data. Patients in the human trials now who have had this therapy for 3 years, and the word that I kept seeing used was durable. That after 3 years, the data does suggest that there is continued expression of factor VIII, that this is a durable product. However, there is a little bit of concern that was expressed over a plateau that occurred. There was a drop-off in the factor VIII expression, and after 3 years, the factor VIII expression was about 20%. And the model, evidently, according to the presenter, expects that that will get to, in 8 years, 5%. So 5% factor levels after 8 years, rather low, though it was caveated that these are relatively conservative. This is a conservative data point. That being said, to have someone on a gene therapy product now for 36 months with continued factor VIII expression, 20% isn't perhaps the biggest number, but we are still in discussions about what number are we even aiming for. So while it is concerning that there is a drop-off and a plateau of the expression, it is also encouraging that there is an expression as high as 20% that is statistically significant. So that's something worth keeping an eye on, as is the news that BioMarin will be filing regulatory applications for approval of their gene therapy medication in both the United States and Europe in the fourth quarter of this year. So gene therapy rapidly moving forward, and hemophilia may have a gene therapy medication being considered by the Food and Drug Administration before the end of this year. That sounds crazy to say, but that is where we are. So stay tuned for more. uniQure, who has a gene therapy medication for hemophilia B patients that they are currently in clinical trials for, they presented data on their phase 2 trial that after 35 weeks, the mean factor 9 level was 45%. So that's a nice solid amount, 45% after 35 weeks. They are currently enrolling candidates or enrolling participants for their phase 3 clinical trial, that is uniQure, going into their phase 3. And finally, Sangamo and Pfizer have a investigational gene therapy product that also showed positive data after its phase 1-2 study with a patient that had durable factor 8 levels for up to 52 weeks. So a full year on that product that also had different encouraging data. The phase 2 was a dosing cohort, so I think there was 4 different escalated dosing. I'm not going to get too granular, but the major takeaway was encouraging data. Again, that word used, durable factor 8 levels for up to 52 weeks in that particular therapy. I do want to note one tweet that was sent out from Professor Makris, who listeners to this podcast will be familiar with. He is the president of the European Association for Hemophilia and Allied Disorders. Professor Makris tweeted out, "I am convinced that we need a single independent international database of all patients with hemophilia that undergo gene therapy. Patients should be followed for life, despite the regulatory requirements for shorter follow-up." And that tweet, I will acknowledge, got quite a bit of traction. A very good point being made there that as we enter this new phase of science, are we taking the steps toward due diligence to ensure that we're tracking our international community of patients collectively and comprehensively. Takeaway number 4, women with bleeding disorders. I saw numerous bits of information, data points, and infographics that were either shared as part of presentations or online in conjunction with presentations. Saw this one from the European Hemophilia Consortium. Did you know that 10% of women go to the doctor with heavy blood loss? 29% of these women may have a bleeding disorder, but only 2% get tested. So 1 in 10 go, about a third may have, but only 2% are tested. Major gap there. There was one session in particular on von Willebrand factor, von Willebrand disease in pregnancy, which of course caught my eye given that Natalie is a doula. During that presentation, Dr. Michelle Lavin, hematologist and advocate, had tweeted out as it relates to von Willebrand factor in pregnancy, "So much changes and so much we don't yet understand." And obviously, so much changes within a woman's body during pregnancy, and von Willebrand factor as it is, there's such transient nature, transient properties to it. I may not be saying that quite correctly, but as we know from the von Willebrand series that we did through Bloodstream Media and the experience of the various patients and clinicians that we heard from, von Willebrand factor is a little bit mysterious to begin with as we relate it to, say, factor 8 or factor 9. And then when you think about pregnancy, it's a whole nother ballgame. But on top of that, there are the clinical, medical nuances and challenges of treating a woman with a bleeding disorder. And then there are the structural challenges. And by that, I mean the gender bias podcast that we talked about earlier on this show. What are the ways in which women are disadvantaged within the system, irrespective of their particular health challenge, bleeding disorder, whatever it may be? So in a way, you kind of have to be fighting this fight on two fronts when it comes to, let's call it, equality amongst the genders with bleeding disorders. There's the specific clinical nuances, such as things like we've never had to worry about what happens to a guy with a bleeding disorder through pregnancy. And there's also the systemic problems that we have to concern ourselves with as it pertains to women with bleeding disorders. The good news about that second piece is that women with bleeding disorders have a larger coalition of women with various chronic and rare disease health challenges to align themselves with when we think about fighting gender bias and fighting some of these systemic challenges. Where are the other coalitions of female advocates from other communities who we can align ourselves with to make more and more progress on that fight? Food for thought. And finally, fifth takeaway, a big shout out to Bayer. It was announced during the conference that Bayer will donate 50 million units of Factor VIII to the WFH's humanitarian aid program, specifically for countries with less than one unit of Factor per capita. So Bayer, the latest corporate partner to join the World Federation's efforts to make treatment for all a reality. So during this conference, with a lot of data about medications being worked on and ways to improve the management and treatment of hemophilia, good to see that yet another big donation of Factor has been made to those in situations where Factor is not being provided to them. So that's it. There's your five takeaways from ISTH 2019. Hashtag 2019. Oh, I can't believe I forgot the hashtag right there at the end. So three places you can go for more. If you're an app person, there's an ISTH Academy app. So if you download that app, you can have access right there on your phone or tablet to the over 400 webcasts, over 1,000 e-posters, and 1,900 abstracts. Go to the ISTH Academy app. You can also go to the ISTHCongressDaily.org. There you'll find recaps from some of the most highlighted or featured sessions or data presentations, as well as access to all those other resources available through the Academy app. Finally, feel free yourself to use the hashtag ISTH2019 across social media, and I would continue to encourage all who are attending conferences to use the hashtags of those conferences to help spread the information, to the conference organizers to be really mindful and considerate in the creation and communication about your hashtags. They're really valuable resources, not just for during the conference, but for weeks, months, years later as resources online. And finally, to those who are taking the time during their sessions to take photographs of the slides, to write quick analysis of what's being said, especially for those of you with expertise that the average patient or community advocate, community leader doesn't have when all of these medical conferences are taking place. Thank you. It is very helpful, and it's a great way to help the global community stay connected at conferences taking place all around the world. So thank you, and please keep up the good work. Now, moving into our first infusion, we'll just call it the infusion segment. We'll just call it first infusion. Natalie, how would you describe what this segment is all about? What did we capture exactly?
We captured the audio of me infusing you for the first time.
That's true. And what was that experience like?
It was intense. It was intense to... you know, I wanted to do well and not hurt you, and you were anxious, and that made me anxious, and so yeah, there's a, I don't know, a bunch of feels.
Give it a listen. I hope it's something that a number of people here will relate to, and some of the conversations that we had with one another and with our two community friends who are here with us, which I think was really valuable. Coach Jessica and cameraman Chris, and see what you relate to, see what you can take away. Hope you enjoy.
So today's a historic day.
Why?
Because I'm infusing you for the first time.
Yay! See, I feel like I can't do my host job and play off that excitement because I have a different real energy.
Well, talk about
good to have our friends here.
Talk about your real energy.
What part of it?
What are you feeling right now?
Very anxious, as indicated by the size of my veins.
Oh, they're so cold.
My hands are really cold too.
Yeah.
I thought the size of your veins were because you just pumped yourself up. I saw you doing some like push-ups.
Yeah, well, that should have helped. And I did the warm water, and I've been having all this seltzer.
Is it from holding the cold can? No, they're just
they're just
freezing.
Cold.
Okay.
These were just in hot water like 2 minutes ago.
So he's not giving me much to work with, but that's okay.
So what do you do in this situation, Jess, when Chris's veins are kind of tough? What advice do you have here for Natalie to make my anxiety go down?
Chris only lets me infuse one vein on his entire body, so I don't really
have a lot. That's a good
idea.
We should start with the best one. What a great idea.
So actually, I think that is like kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Well, at least for me, it makes me less anxious because I know she's got experience on it. And I haven't been very successful at her doing a different vein.
And it's a reliable like pipeline sort of.
Yeah. Thing. So it's actually one I don't do very, I can't do it because it's in a weird angle for me, but it's a good vein.
Okay.
It's a nice vein.
Should we put on a tourniquet and see what kind of
Sure. All right. Look at you.
What we get? How do I even do this?
All right. I'll do this part.
Oh, this thing.
Yeah.
Confidence building. This is all a joke.
Okay.
How's that feel?
Really extraordinarily tight. Too tight.
Too
most
tight?
Would say. Yeah.
Okay. Here, let me do it again.
Yeah.
Just tell me when.
Is it clear that we haven't done this before? The scar tissue here makes this one a little easier to see. That's kind of my version of, like, these two are my versions of the reliable. Not blind, look, feel it. You can see it and you can feel it. You can see the where I poked it from my last infusion if you went just above that a little bit.
Could I just go in the same hole?
Not in the same hole. You just want to go right above the hole. Veins go toward the heart, so if you go above the hole, the flow is going in this direction, so that's good, rather than flowing toward where that little hole was. So the hole is nicely healed. Good job, hole.
What about this one right here?
Yeah, he can be good, but he sits right on top of whatever.
He's a little wiggly.
Yeah, and he's on a...
What if I hold him in place while I do it?
Mm-mm.
Does that work?
No.
I think it's time for Patrick to start taking some deep breaths.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Deep breath. Deep breaths.
Out through your mouth. Ah. Let your exhales be longer than your inhales. I'm going to start unpacking some things while we're breathing.
That's good,
okay?
Yeah. And what questions do you have about these things?
Well, so this is the factor.
Right.
Have you ever mixed that before?
Squeeze them together.
There you go.
All right. Nice. Then we do a little flippy.
Other direction.
Other direction.
There you go. The water joins the powder.
Then you give it a little swirl, swirl.
Make sure it all just gets nice and dissolved.
How's that look?
Good. It's just, you know, it's going to take a sec.
Okay. Looks good to me.
Great start.
Then this guy comes out of here, this little syringe.
Mm-hmm. Still known as a syringe.
Maybe a few more deep breaths.
Maybe.
Yeah. Keep that going.
Keep breathing.
It looks like it's getting a little better. So with the saline or the liquid on top, hold this vertically and then pull back.
All right. And then I want some air, right?
Yes.
On the top?
Yeah. I usually have like between a cc and two of air to sit behind this so you can push it through the tubing. Anyone else?
And then push it back in and push it back? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, I kind of play with it a little bit. Oh, I don't push it in necessarily though, so we can pull that on back. So after the initial amount is in there, if you see like, oh, there's some bonus I want to get in there, you first want to get rid of this air.
And then suck in whatever you can suck in.
And then suck in whatever you can suck in like that. And then if you're like, oh, there's still some water up there, maybe I can help pull it down into the saline and dilute it a little further and blah, 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 blah. But you're never trying to push the medicine back in.
Okay. So now.
There we go.
Yep.
To get rid of the air, you want to go like this to about 1 cc so we get all of the medicine like that.
Yeah, you could even take a little more between 1 and 2. You just call it 2. Call it 2. So you'll twist this guy off as well. So if you want to rest that fella across, yeah, you could do that for a second. And then maybe we'll just...
Like this?
Yeah, twist. There you go. So these tend to be the two most reliable for me. Yeah, I'm thinking this guy looks particularly feeling there. So there's some scar tissue.
It looks juicy.
Yeah, but also you can... That track line also kind of shows you like the points of entry.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's a pretty reliable one. Doesn't really tend to roll. Want to try
that
one?
Is that the one you want?
If you feel confident with it.
You don't feel good about that, Jess?
Sorry, I don't want to be pushy. Yesterday we were chatting about the placement of your syringe too, right? So like if his hand is resting there on your knee away from the table, think about the length of the tubing from the syringe to your needle. And you don't want to be in the position of like, if you were to grab the needle right now and try to poke him, your syringe is going to fall off of the table. So you want to be in a spot where everything can rest and you're not trying to fumble with now picking up the syringe, right, afterwards. So that distance isn't going to work.
Okay, so I'll put you here. Let me go like that.
What are the rest of the steps? So you've got his tourniquet on.
So then I push in. I feel like a little pop. I watch the blood come back, and then I slowly push if it starts to bubble in the skin.
So you're going to check for blood in your needle. And then you're going to want to pull back on the syringe a little bit to make sure that you're continuing to get flow. Because just because you get blood once doesn't mean that you're actually in the vein. You could have gone completely through it and you're still going to see a flash. So once you have your needle placed, pull slightly on the syringe, make sure it keeps flowing. And then most importantly after that step is you need to remove the tourniquet before you push. Okay. Because you'll blow his vein if you don't remove the tourniquet. And then once the tourniquet's removed,
then I push slowly, very slowly. Mm-hmm.
Until when? When do you stop?
Until all the medicine's gone.
And no air, right? No air.
Try not to push air.
Ready?
As ready as I'm gonna be.
Okay.
Keep those deep breaths, Kaylin.
Yeah, keep the deep breaths. You got this.
If you need any assistance,
do you feel? Smaller. Do you like this angle? Because I feel like the vein is more defined when the wrist is like this.
It's flat.
Like when we, every time we turn it, it seems to disappear.
So, yeah. So you want
to. But also, you need to be at an angle that works for you. And
well, I can kind of come up if you want to keep it straight, and come this way.
The bevel of the needle needs to be up.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, and then you want to pinch the butterflies up together to hold them like that.
Yeah.
Does it feel like it's in?
No, but it's very deep.
Yeah, you're in a little bit too deep.
Okay.
So maybe pull it out?
Sure.
Maybe cap the needle first. We can get a new needle for the next one.
Be careful when you're capping it not to poke yourself.
Also to note, good job.
Yes.
Both of you for giving it a go, Natalie and Patrick for letting her. That was a big step. That was a big step. First proud of you.
All right, so tell people where we are, what just happened, so that we can catch up.
So
we took a break.
I tried and didn't succeed. Yeah, we just talked through. We found a different vein that is more visible than the one that you really can't see the trajectory of or the color.
But we had talked about you're going to use one hand to hold his vein since it's a little bit rolly, right? So then you're going to use the other hand to put the needle in. And now what are you doing with the syringe?
Setting it down.
But, there you go. Okay.
So I'm going to alcohol the area.
All right. Do a team breath.
How are you feeling?
Coach, I feel good.
Feel good?
Coach Bombardier is going to take it over from here. I will now be tuning out and staring at the cabinets.
Okay. Do you want to pinch the top? Yep, there you go. And you're checking that the bubble is up.
Bubbles
and we're
going
to hold your thumb on the vein. Hold down. Now, remember the steepness is you're going to go pretty shallow.
Watch the lens roll up.
Yeah, that's
fun. There you go.
That was a good time.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. And they won the game.
Level out a little bit.
That's cool. And
okay, now are you checking for any flash? You've got your flash. There you go. Okay. So now you're going to pull back a little bit onto your syringe. Don't push the needle anymore.
I'm not. I'm just...
Yep. Pull back a little bit. Make sure you're still in the vein. Are you getting anything back? No.
No.
Okay. So this situation, what could be happening is the bevel is pushed up against the vein. So we can just let it relax a little bit slightly and try your best not to advance it. So see how you got more?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So now we're going to go ahead and remove the tourniquet.
Okay.
So tourniquet is removed and very, very, very slowly.
Push and see.
Yep, go ahead. And you don't have to hold it too much, but go ahead and go slow. And you're going to watch for that bubble, like you said. And he'll let you know if it hurts.
Okay. What's on your human? I don't know.
It's not bubbling at all.
Just a song?
Do you feel like you are pushing any of the fluid through?
Something.
Is the plunger moving?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you're pushing it through. Don't try to force it. Go ahead and just let it go at its own speed. There.
Yeah. How's it feel, baby?
He's not paying attention. He's,
What's your favorite Broadway musical?
What? Oh, Red is the Broadway musical.
Well,
Red is
a rock.
Oh, it's a good one.
Yeah. I'd like to play Gervais one day. I think that'd be a fun.
Once you get into this year, you're going to start to go slower even than what you're doing now.
Yeah.
Watch this come through and stop when it gets about here. Okay, you're good. Done. Now pull back.
Okay.
There you go. Just to make sure that you don't have that pressure.
Keep on slow.
Okay. And then we go like that.
Yep, put pressure, pull the needle out. Okay, and here's when you say it. You're all done. You can breathe, Patrick.
We did it.
He did it.
You did it.
Good job, you guys.
What was the most anxious part of it for you?
Let's get rid of this needle just hanging out here in our life. What was the most anxious part?
Yeah, like what felt, what made you nervous?
Anticipating the stick and the pain.
Was there a pain in the stick?
There was like the typical stick pain, but it wasn't like a bad. But with the first one, if we poked through or whatever we did, like there was pain, and then the pain lingers and it like
stings.
Yeah, and it just sort of like amplifies the like, oh, this is bad, you know? So it's like harder to come back down from.
I think you did a good job.
I think you did a good job. I think everybody did a good job. I survived. My job was to survive. And I did.
You did.
So I did a good job. Thank you guys. That was good. This was how this should happen, like with other people who have done it and know it. Cause like, I can't help you at all.
I feel like Patrick and I might be a little different. I think similar to like anxiety of like the infusion in the stick, but I think yours is a lot around that you enjoy the control part of it. It's the first step though. Like, it's awesome.
Do you feel more confident now about me doing it in the future or less?
More. Oh, for sure more.
Like that the first one's over.
I mean, I think like big picture, the fact that, you know, stick number two was a success is like amazing. You know, as an infusion experience, this was a much more anxious one than my typical already anxious infusion experience. But like it went well. So I have more confidence in like your abilities. I just don't know how I will respond next time, you know, because it's two separate things.
Yeah.
I think this is such a beautiful representation of how couples feel going through this. I'm just, you guys are doing a really good job of explaining how each of you are feeling and approaching this situation. And it, Natalie, I think that you're experiencing what every significant other experiences in the situation is you just want to feel like you can take care of your person, and if something's happening to your person, to not feel completely helpless.
I think it was really helpful having you guys here because you're a partner with experience infusing, you're someone with hemophilia who has anxiety around the infusion, so it's a very mirrored experience. I think it's also for someone who has feelings around this stuff, having somebody else who can provide guidance and a little help and coaching and so that like my job really literally is just to survive is good. I think that's a good thing. That's set this up for success.
Proud of you guys.
Super.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thanks for your help.
I'm really happy we got to be a part of this. Thanks for letting us.
Nerdy hemo life moment stuff.
Glad I got to watch it through a video screen, so I didn't actually like look at the needle.
Yeah, a layer of protection between you and the event.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, moving into Mama Sue's Netflix recs. Do want to recognize one final time our presenting sponsor, Takeda, and a reminder to check out bleedingdisorders.com to see many of the resources and programs that Takeda offers to the Bleeding Disorders community. Mama Sue, since last we spoke, you were at my house. We got to see one another's houses. You saw mine for the first time.
Yes, I loved it. Loved my visit.
You also pet a giraffe and a rhinoceros while you were out here. So kind of a big deal, kind of a big trip.
Yes, it was great. I loved the San Diego Zoo.
Yeah, we'll have to get that on a future segment of Mama Sue's Zoo Reviews. Actually, that's got a great little bit to it. And you do like zoos. People don't know that about you, but you are a fan
of
zoos.
I love to go to zoos wherever I go.
So, all right, we'll talk about that segment off air, but we'll get to the one we're here to record first. So it's summer. People have more time on their hands, maybe, or are looking for something to relax to once in a while. What do you got? What are you watching right now?
Well, what I just finished watching was something I stumbled upon on Amazon called The Royal. It's about in the 1960s. It's a series, 8 seasons, maybe 8 or 10 episodes per season. It took me a few weeks to watch it. The Royal is about a 1960s country hospital in England and how they managed and their day-to-day. And you really get invested in the different characters, the doctors, the porters, the nurses, the administrators, the patients. And if anybody's watched Call the Midwife, I don't know if they have, It reminds me a lot of the Call of the Midwife. So they kind of left it up in the air at the end of the eighth season, but I can't seem to find any further seasons. It's called The Royal because it's St. Aidan's Royal Free Hospital is where the story takes place.
It says here in their Wikipedia page, the show began as a spinoff of ITV, not sure what that is, period police drama series Heartbeat, featuring characters from Heartbeat during the first three series before becoming its own entity. First three seasons? That might be a typo in Wikipedia. But okay, so that's interesting. They took some characters. So that's a successful spinoff. Eight seasons. This is number of series two. Why is it number of series? Maybe it's something about the way the Brits identify their shows, because we would say number of seasons, not the number of series. But this is saying number of series. So, you know, really big things we're discovering here.
I mean, every episode, there's maybe something a little real life, a little sad. And then there's also something funny or something happy going on in each episode. And it's great escapism, and I love it.
Looks like it ended July 2011, actually. So I think it's safe to say it won't be coming back for a ninth
series. Yeah, it's a bit old.
And it says related shows, Heartbeat, which I just mentioned, and then The Royal Today, a British medical soap opera. Oh, Mom, there's a soap opera that's a spinoff of the similarly themed drama, The Royal. Did you know that?
Oh, I'll have to try it. And I did not know that. No.
The Royal Today, also an ITV show. See, now this says one series. Again, I don't know what series means. 50 episodes. So I don't know what the structure of these things are whatsoever, but they exist. So The Royal Today, there, you can add that to your list.
All right. I'll look it up.
So what else? What else are you watching?
Something else I watched, which I found very interesting. You know, I'm very interested in forensic shows and crime shows. So mm-hmm. on Netflix, there's something called Exhibit A. It's a relatively new release, and okay. It's four episodes. The first episode is about video evidence, which I always thought was pretty much 100% accurate. And this episode shows how it's actually not that accurate.
Like deep fakes, that kind of thing?
Well, I mean, this man is in prison right now. He's about 6'3" because the video evidence of this store robbery showed him as about 5'8". In reality, the person that committed this crime was much, much shorter than him. But the way the video picks up his body against the glass, it makes him look much shorter. None of these things are really 100%. And then that was episode one. It's about video evidence and how it's not 100%. And the second episode was about blood spatter, which I think we kind of know about, that like the microscopic blood spatter.
That's always so interesting to me. You know, when they even show that on like NCIS or any of those kind of shows, and I know they're, you know, it's dramatized, but the idea that people study the blood spatter and can glean so much information from it, that I do find that fascinating.
It is fascinating. And like, it'll only go a few feet from the victim who's been, you know, killed. And this investigator broke a 27-year-old cold case on microscopic blood spatter on this lady's nightgown all these years later. And, it's pretty interesting. It's pretty reliable, unlike the video evidence. The blood spatter is pretty reliable.
Is the show kind of dark? It sounds like it might be kind of heavy.
No, informative and interesting. It's not dark at all, no.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. So that's Exhibit A. And you said that was on Netflix?
Yes. And then the one that I found, episode I found very interesting, was about DNA evidence. And I, in my mind, always thought DNA evidence was also 100%. But all DNA evidence is really good for is eliminating you. So
how so?
Well, because you drop DNA wherever you go. If you're walking along and you're dropping DNA and I come behind you and step where you were, and I'm going to drag your DNA a mile away somewhere and drop it there. So I never thought of it like that. It's called touch DNA. maybe they were there weeks or months ago, or maybe someone that they knew passed through. And it is very interesting. So really, it's like nothing is really 100%, you know. I would recommend it, though. I think it was really a very good show, Exhibit A.
Huh. Yeah, especially if you are a fan of true crime like you and all the different kind of true crime stuff that's out there, you know, these kind of deep dives on different aspects of true crime investigation and what's reliable, what's not, how innocent people get affected. That's interesting. Okay, good recommendation.
These things really, what the takeaway is that these things can be supportive in prosecuting, but they should not be counted as a, you know, true evidence.
Okay, Exhibit A, The Royals. And what's third on your list for this month?
The third thing I watched was on Netflix called Bird Brain. I think that's also fairly new. And this is just one episode. And these scientists in particular follow crows and parrots. What I never knew also is that they always said birds didn't have large brains or couldn't figure out puzzles and cooperate. And now they know they can. And they showed them figuring out puzzles and using tools to get food, in particular crows. Like they would put a piece of food in like a small little space where they couldn't put their beak to get it. And the crow would go and get a stick. And they do this in the wild also and use a stick to edge that food to himself. And they said previously they thought only primates and humans did use tools, but crows most definitely use tools. I thought that was quite interesting.
Did you start watching this after what we talked about in Los Angeles?
Yes, I watched it since I saw you because I know you and Natalie are interested in getting a crow training going. And
that is correct, yes.
They can be trained.
Well, we believe that. I've been listening to the local crows today off and on during their journey. They actually haven't been too vocal this week. I noted that, but they have been today so far. So I appreciate that you're putting in some research for the family on crows and really smart birds.
Well, you know, there was another cute thing like this. One of the men that live at this lab with the crows, he hadn't been there in a few days. So the crow was so happy to see him first. He was emotionally very happy. And then he started biting at the man because he was angry that he hadn't been there. And then the man was calming him and petting him. And then he gripped the man's finger for over an hour to not let him go, not to hurt him, but he didn't want him to leave. And it was so heartwarming.
I would melt.
The three different emotions, like happiness, anger, and then neediness, like don't leave me again like that. And it's just a bird. You don't think a bird would do this.
Yeah, I guess what a bird, there's, you know, different species and there's such a range. And this one is obviously highly intelligent, not just, you know, I don't know what the right word is, but like tactically with the ability to, you know, fish the food out, so to speak, with a stick. But obviously there's also an emotional intelligence. Like that's quite a little emotional journey that the bird took in a short period of time.
Well, you should definitely watch this.
You know, this is like perfect for me. So I don't know what any of the people listening to this think, but thanks for letting me know about this via the Bloodstream podcast. I greatly appreciate it.
You're welcome.
You know, just as we have to say goodbye here in a second, but as maybe a closing thought, I was just thinking so you were here last weekend. We have a wedding coming up. We'll be traveling to in Canada. Last year we had one in Asia. You went to Ireland. There was a long stretch where you were not traveling so much. And in the last couple few years, you've traveled a lot more. Why do you think that is? And what, like, how has that benefited you? Because I know that a number of people who listen to this have anxieties around travel for one health related reason or another. And you've had a turning point in the last few years with how you view that. And as someone who travels a lot, I haven't asked you this question, you know, in another format, like a normal, just mom, son talk. So I'm curious, like how has that changed you?
Well, I was never really a big traveler. I wouldn't say it was due to anxiety. It's just such a pain in the neck to travel these days. You know,
sure.
So many hours before the trip and then hours coming home and when you get on the other side. But I've had, you know, starting with your wedding a few years ago in Portugal and then Hong Kong and now Vancouver. These are very important things to me. These are people I love. And of course, I want to get there. So it kind of got me back in the track of traveling. And you just have to put up with it. I mean, you do a lot of traveling and it's really worth it to travel and see things you want to see and see people you want to see. And I don't think of any worries or nerves on the plane. I mean, you know, what's going to happen is going to happen. I never worry about that.
Yeah, I don't really worry about that kind of stuff either. So that's good to hear. Just kind of breaking that ice and getting into a habit of doing it a little bit.
Yeah, and it's okay. Fantastic. I've loved my travels in the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun to share memories and experiences in different places together, including most recently at the San Diego Safari Park. So I'm glad that you feel that way. And thanks again for the segment. Appreciate you, Mom.
You're very welcome. Talk to you soon, honey. Bye bye.
All right, parting shots. One last shot to leave the audience with, bleeding disorders related or otherwise, before we say goodbye. What is your parting shot for the month of July, Natalie?
Well, my parting shot is more of a shout out. At the end of June, at the Bombardier Blood screening in Los Angeles, I got to meet a longtime listener of Bloodstream and a big supporter, Danielle. And it was really, really nice to meet her and, you know, to meet someone who is listening to these podcasts and really enjoying and pulling out some education from them. And she brought me the most adorable personalized mug ever.
What'd it say?
It says, "Awesome doula at your cervix."
I get it.
I love it so much. And it had my name on the other side, and she's just the sweetest. And so I just wanted to thank her for listening and thank everyone for listening. But it was a real pleasure to meet a listener of ours who I'd communicated with via social media and got to finally meet in person.
Yeah, it was neat to meet Danielle, and it's also very neat anytime there's somebody who either says that they're a listener or shows up in a Bloodstream shirt to an event and to see that, oh, cool, all right, there's people that are on the other side of this thing. It's a nice boost. So when you do see us at a place, it's always nice to hear
Please
from
engage.
You. So yeah, say hello. It means a lot. My parting shot for this month is that I was fortunate enough to visit America's oldest candy company earlier this month, Ye Old Pepper Candy Company in the famous, or I guess infamous, Salem, Massachusetts, which I have to say, found to be quite adorable.
So adorable.
Wouldn't have guessed it, only know it because of witches, but now that I have friends who live in Salem, Massachusetts.
That aren't witches.
Who are not witches, to the best of my knowledge, then I have a reason to know the place, and it includes America's oldest candy company, Ye Old Pepper Candy Company.
And Patrick loves candy.
I'm in a really big candy kick right now. It's not always the truth, but these days, I'm a candy guy right now. I'm a candy guy right now. So that's my parting shot. If you're in Massachusetts and passing through Boston, maybe check out Salem. It's actually really quaint and adorable, charming, a lot of old architecture, and places like America's Oldest Candy Company that you can visit.
And that is all for this episode. Special thanks to everyone at Believe Limited, the National Hemophilia Foundation, Entertainment to Effect Change, the Hemophilia Alliance, our presenting sponsor, Takeda, as well as our segment sponsors. Thanks as well to segment contributors Debbie De La Riva, Ivan Giron, Amy Board, Jessica and Chris Bombardier, Oslo the Dog, and Mama Sue Lynch.
Subscribe to the Bloodstream Podcast and the Ask the Expert Podcast on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a rating, share our show, and help spread the word.
You can email us at mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. You'll also find the Bloodstream,
You'll also find the Bloodstream
on facebook.com/bloodstreammedia and on Twitter @bloodstreaminfo.
Aha.
Just to, you know, change it up.
Make it difficult for you. Reminder to check out the program notes for this episode in your podcast player or on bloodstreampod.com. for links and additional information about the various stories featured on this episode.
My name is Natalie Lynch.
And I'm Patrick Lynch.
And until next time,
take self-care of yourself.